Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
The high cost of inflation, monetary policy rate and interest rate at the bank are also high. So those are basically the bread and butter issues, the various economic issues. That is what the expectations of Ghanaians are for the new president.
Expectations are high for new Ghanaian president John Dramani Mahama to quickly resolve the economic issues facing the country.
Let me say honestly and frankly about my personal feeling is that the president has put very high the bar about the whole scenario, the whole political arena, according to his own views.
New Mozambican President Daniel Chapo promises to promote and consolidate national unity, human rights, democracy, and the well-being of citizens.
Also, now he's facing some pressure from both current President, President Biden, as well as coming President, President Trump, who wants to see an agreement and thinks this agreement is in the interest of Israel.
And as U.S. President-elect Donald Trump prepares to be sworn into office, African analysts weigh in on what his second-term president may feel like. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Ghana, expectations are high for newly installed President John Dramani Mahama to quickly resolve the economic issues facing the country. This as the president assembles his cabinet following his official installation last week. It comes as parliament began vetting three of Mahama's first cabinet appointees. They include Minister of Finance Designate Castle Atuforsen, Minister of Energy nominee Samuel Abdoulaye Jinapo, and Attorney General and Minister of Justice Designate Dominic Aini. For analysis of the latest political development and expectations of the new Ghanaian president, I reach Emmanuel Amua Dakwa. He is an economist and partner at CCard Global, a consulting firm.
The number one expectation of Ghanaians is to be able to get us out of the economic crisis. As you are aware, Ghana is currently on an IMF program as a result of some macroeconomic indicators that were not performing prior to the election. Number one reason why Ghanaians voted for the new government, i.e. the high level of public debt, which has its accompanying interest payments, the high cost of inflation, monetary policy rate and interest rate at the bank are also high. So those are basically the bread and butter issues, the various economic issues. That is what the expectations of Ghanaians are for the new president to be able to solve these challenges.
One of the issues I've heard some Ghanaians talk about is the issue of corruption and transparency. Talk to me about how the expectations are regarding this.
Every government, when they are being voted to power, they promise to fight corruption. But as you are aware, a lot of times as they progress, especially during their second term, they sometimes mess up. Let me quote this Public Accounts Committee, which every year does a report on how state institutions are faring. Year in, year out, you will see a lot of irregularities, procurement breaches, and other corruption-related issues. And so once that is on the table, a lot of Ghanaians want corruption nipped in the bud. And so it was one of the issues. But fundamentally, it was the issue of the economy that won this election. But at the later stage of the MPP government, there were a couple of corruption scandals, which include the National Service Scheme scandal, also the grabbing of state properties and state assets, which angered a lot of Ghanaians. And that is why some Ghanaians also voted against the New Patriotic Party. Corruption is a canker in Ghana, which is costing us more than $3 billion annually. And I have always said that the fight against corruption should be an economic policy so that we make it very difficult and painful for people, especially people in public office, to engage in corruption. The SY government did some things right in terms of setting up the Office of the Special Prosecutor, but unfortunately, that office did not perform up to standard. And so for the fight against corruption, it has become one of the institutions to help fight, apart from the police, the IOCO, the SRAJ, and the other anti-corruption, you know, bodies. And so corruption is very ripe in Ghana, but policymakers, especially this new government, should be able to make sure that people who have, you know, engaged in corrupt activities are brought to the book.
You talked about bread and butter issues, high inflation, high cost of living. People want their living conditions to improve. What, in your view, do you think the honeymoon period will last before Ghanaians start demanding for immediate resolution to the challenges, economic challenges they face?
I'm sure the honeymoon ended as soon as the president was sworn in last week, because a lot of Ghanaians, you see the kind of vote. This is more than 1.5 million gap in terms of votes against the SWA government and then the party. And so I think Ghanaians are currently expecting the government to deliver right from the get-go. The government has started putting in its cabinet. We have seen three ministers. The expectation was that after the swearing-in, at least all the ministerial list will be out so that government can put itself together. Because apart from the ministers, you have to also appoint the metropolitan district and the assemblies. You also have to appoint some CEOs to state institutions for full government to run. The honeymoon for me has already ended, and Ghanaians expect the president to deliver from day one. We have seen some pockets of actions taken with regards to appointment, but Ghanaians expect the government to start performing right from the day that the president took the oath of office.
Emmanuel Amuadakwa is an economist and partner at CCAD Global. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. In Mozambique, newly installed President Daniel Chapo is promising to promote and consolidate national unity, human rights, democracy, and the well-being of citizens. This after he was sworn in at a ceremony in the capital, Maputo, on Wednesday. He took over from Philippe Nyusi, who had exhausted the two presidential term limits. But supporters of the main opposition leader, Venancio Mondlane, argue that Chapo was not the legitimate winner of the last presidential contest. Some analysts say the new president must resolve tensions to ensure the country's peace and stability. For analysis and the latest political developments, I reach Carlton Kadiado. He's a researcher and lecturer at the Joaquim Chissano University.
You have a mix of environments. There is an environment which is completely calm around the ceremony, the swearing of the president. But there's also small scale and very localized areas where people did protest against the swearing of the current president because they still believe that the real president is Venancio Mondlane and he is the one who should have been sworn in. But as I said, it's a very localized and very small scale areas in Maputo.
Kariado, what is the expectation of the newly installed president?
Let me say honestly and frankly about my personal feeling is that the president has put very high the bar about the whole scenario, the whole political arena, according to his own views. First, about the diagnostic that he has done, about the frank and direct assessment related to the problems that we as a society need to face. That was really very good and very deep. At some point, even striking against the former president, Philippe Nyusi. And I hope that he did not understand it as a direct strike against him. But on the other hand, It is very important to say that the solutions that he has provided in his speech are very optimistic, starting from the dialogue and then the reforms and the transformations that he gives himself to put forward. Some of these solutions for the problems are really painful, but it was really very good to hear from him that he is willing to put forward these kind of solutions, even if they are painful for the good of the society. He will do that.
Kadiado, what about the prospect of resolving the tensions and the dispute about the outcome of the election, for which reason series of protests were held, including even when he was being sworn in as the next president to take over from Nyusi? People still protested, saying he is illegitimate.
I don't expect to see it resolved very soon, on a short term. I assume that it is a process, and as long as he is willing in demonstrating the willing to resolve the issue, it is very good. And there is no other way around rather than solve it through the dialogue. And the dialogue and the table for the dialogue is open, so that we will see, at least basing on what he has said, there is no way back. The way forward is to move around and with dialogue.
Carlton Kadiado is a researcher and lecturer at the Joaquim Chissano University. He spoke with me from the Mozambican capital, Maputo. The opposition political party, the Namibia Economic Freedom Fighters, or NEFF, is calling on President Nangolo Mbumba to dismiss or force the resignation of leaders of the Electoral Commission. It is also calling for fresh polls after rejecting the outcome of the last general election. This after accusing the commission of failing to effectively organize transparent and credible elections. Opposition groups rejected the outcome of the presidential vote, saying it was rigged. The NEFF contends that the Electoral Act paves the way for the president to remove officials of the Electoral Commission. The law stipulates that the president, in consultation with the National Assembly, can remove any member of the body who is found guilty of neglect of duty or misconduct. Epaphroditus Mokolingo is the president of the NEFF. He tells me that there should be a fresh vote, contending that the electoral body failed to administer credible polls.
Yes, that is true. We call the president to call those ECN, because Namibia is we are under democracy country. But our democracy now, our president, they're having a big engage with the Zimbabwean government. So right now, we was having last year, November, 27 November, we was having an election. After the day of the election, the president, he said, no, he's going to put another 2 days, because he was supposed to ask the parliament. He never engaged with the parliament. He never engaged with anybody, only himself with ECN. The president of the country is the president also for Swapo Party. What we want the president to intervene in the ECN, because this is not a free and fair election.
If the president intervenes, then what happens? If he removes the electoral commission officials, then what happens?
No, Namibian people, they want fresh election. Now they want also the new body, ECN new body. If they fire those old ones, we want a new one. We want a new body. And fresh election, because the election was only supposed to be 1 day, and now they extend for 2 days. Now election was for 3 days. In our constitution, there is no such a thing.
So basically, you are raising legal issues. So why don't you go to court?
But look, we're having a court case, but that one is for another party. But we're backing that political party, Independent Patriot for Change. So right now, I'm driving to capital city to attend the court case. Now we're going to hear what the court case income.
So what's next for the NEFF if the president refuses to remove the leadership of the Electoral Commission of Namibia?
No, we're having another step. I can't tell you now. We're having another step. This is Africa. Namibia is
one of the countries in Africa. It's the same like another country in Africa. We're having another step.
Does your call on the president to remove the electoral commission leaders, do you have that support?
Yes, we're having a support.
But your support is so small. Your support is so small, I'm told, that you got less than 1% in the polling. So what makes you think
that 1%. Look, that 1% is only ECN that he gave for us. Look, there was another political party. Even the Namibian people, they don't know that party, but they're having a lot of percent. They get percentage. Look, 2019, it was also in election. They give us 2-seater in parliament. Now they give to another party 16-seater. That is ECN Swapo. And now they give to another political party 6-seater.
Did that not depend on your performance during the election in order to win the parliamentary
seat? No, we was performing 100%. We were campaigning before. Look, in Namibia, they saw another political party who make a demonstration. We was make a demonstration almost for 4 years.
Epaphilos Makwilingo is the president of the Namibia Economic Freedom Fighters. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. A Ugandan member of parliament from the Governing National Resistance Movement, or the NRM, is expressing concern about human rights issues in the country. Attorney Barnabas Tinkasimire says he has presented a motion in parliament for discussion in the legislature. He also says the trial of civilians in a military court contravenes rulings by the High Court and the Supreme Court. His remarks come as prominent opposition leader Kizza Besigye and his co-accused are being tried in a military court. The two accused are charged with illegal possession of firearms in Kenya, Greece, and Switzerland. Both have denied the charges. Attorney Barnabas Tinkasimire tells me that human rights abuses must be addressed.
I belong to the ruling NRM party, but I have great concerns that the way we are managing our politics is not the style that I would prefer. I would prefer the type of politics of engagement, not the politics of persecuting political opponents. They have rights, and we need to protect them. For instance, recently we lost a member of parliament called Mohamed Segnia, who was arrested and could not be granted bail by court. And indeed, this Segnia was very, very sick in prison. He was on remand for 500 days, which was far beyond the constitutional requirement of 360 days.
Some of your supporters from the NRM say that the military court was established by law as well, and an official of the Marshall Court has also said that they were established by law. So it is not illegal to prosecute Dr. Kizza Besigye and his ally for crimes they allege to have committed.
The court martial was established as a disciplinary tribunal under the UPDF Act. UPDF Act only rules, disciplines serving army officers. If you are a civilian and you commit a crime, you are tried in the civilian courts, not under the UPDF Act, because it doesn't concern you. You are not part of the army. Yes, he was in the army. He retired and is a civilian. He's a civilian. Those who support, who told you that the court martial was is a creature of the law, they are ignorant, or they have not told you the truth, that within the Constitution of the Republic of Uganda, starting with Article 126, that creates the judiciary, it does not provide anywhere in that constitution that the court martial is part of any court system in Uganda. The court martial is provided as a disciplinary tribunal.
Mr. Tinkasimire, as a leading member of the ruling NRM party in parliament, have we raised these issues of human rights concerns in parliament to address this particular problem that you enumerated?
Recently, I did, and we expect, because we when we resume the House on 20th, the Speaker has said we are going to debate these matters and have a way forward. Because we cannot continue allowing civilians to be tried in military courts. It's against international law. It's against even our law. I am an advocate of the High Court of Uganda. I cannot support such illegal trials.
When you meet your fellow members of parliament from the NRM, because you are in an overwhelming majority, what do you tell them about this particular issue that you are addressing?
Certainly it is to educate them about the law. Many of them have not addressed their minds to that particular law. And section 119, they are referring to the H&G, or where they charged Dr. Kizza Besigye, only refers to the serving army officers. Serving army officers. And if anyone who is a civilian, aid, even if it would be that he aided a serving army officer to commission any crime, he would be taken to the civil courts and be charged according to the penal code of the Republic of Uganda.
Tinkasemire, some people are saying you are just a rebel member of parliament from the NRM and not a true believer.
That is just the cheap talk. How can you tell? I have been 4 times as an NRM serving. I have never joined any political party. You get me? 4 times. And any of those who are even calling me rebel, they have just been in parliament for 1 term, 2 terms. None of them have served like me. 4 times.
Attorney Barnabas Tinkasemire is a Ugandan member of parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Amnesty International is calling for an independent inquiry into abductions in Kenya. It comes after human rights defenders and civil society expressed concern about the abductions of Kenyan citizens and other nationals by unknown persons. Amnesty International says the authorities in Nairobi must punish those involved. It comes after a critic of the Tanzanian government was abducted in Nairobi and subsequently released when human rights activists demanded that she immediately be freed. Maria Sarungi Tahai wrote on her X platform, "I have been saved," following her release. The Kenyan government has denied involvement in the abductions and says it has launched investigations into them. For more on the calls for the inquiry into the recent abductions, I reached Roland Ebole. He is Amnesty International's regional researcher for Uganda and Tanzania.
Amnesty International is worried over recent spate of abductions in Kenya, and especially abductions of foreigners or citizens of other countries on Kenyan soil. And we are saying that this is part of a growing and worrying trend of transnational repression with governments, violating human rights beyond their borders. And Kenya has a number of times, at least 3 times that we know of and have spoken about, done an extradition procedure that falls short of the law. So this is worrisome, and we call for, one, a stop in this nature of processes where the country does not respect international law, and especially by having lack of an extradition process. And second, we are calling on investigation and thorough independent and impartial investigations into how these abductions have happened, and every responsible officer or state authority brought to justice.
A high-ranking Kenyan official also expressed concern that while he was the Attorney General of Kenya, his own son was abducted. And some human rights defenders are saying that Kenya should do well and launch investigation into who is behind these abductions. When you speak with human rights defenders or human rights activists, what is the feedback you get?
Indeed, it is really worrying. And one, the state, first the president himself says that his government does not tolerate abductions as a way of bringing in to justice or whatever form, wrongdoers or people who break the law. However, we are seeing a different practice whereby abductions have gone on, even during the weeks where he has stood on platforms publicly condemning abduction. We have seen abductions happening. The Inspector General of Police, representing the National Police Service, have denied the police involvement in the abductions. The Directorate of Criminal Investigation has denied involvement of, investigative authorities into abductions. However, abductions have been happening since June 25th last year, when we had, the protest that had been dubbed the Gen Z protest, that had, probably hundreds of thousands, a march to the Kenyan Parliament. This is worrying because from that time we have seen more than 90 people abducted, but no single case whereby the state has come out open and said this is what happened in this particular case and this is the result of our investigation in this case. In fact, the last 1 month alone, we had 7 cases of abductions, and out of these 7 cases, 6 persons were released and 1 person is still missing. In overall, this makes a total of 29 or thereabout of persons that are still missing since 25th June last year. This is very worrying, considering if the state says it is not me, it is not us, yet it fails to investigate and really bring the real perpetrator to book, then who is doing it? And the state failed in its obligation to protect its citizens. So the buck goes back to the state.
A defense lawyer of Chisa Besigye, who was recently arrested in Kenya and being tried at a military court, said he will not advise any of his clients to go to Kenya anymore due to these abductions. What are you hearing on the ground regarding these issues?
Of course, it's the same situation, because we had a case whereby Maria Serungi Tsehai, a media owner, an editor, and a human rights defender from Tanzania, was abducted in broad daylight. And the good thing is that, human rights organizations that got this information responded swiftly and made it, public, which could have led to her release. And so with a lawyer to Kizza Besigye and Kizza Besigye themselves having faced the ordeal that they're going through in the military court in Uganda after a case whereby Kizza Besigye, a leading Ugandan politician, was abducted and disappeared for 4 days before he was arraigned in a military court, a civilian arraigned in a military court, when they actually advised this way, and following what we have seen with the abductions of Maria Tehai, who herself feared that she was being, she suspected she was being taken back to the country, then the position could be that indeed, it is no longer safe for human rights defenders. It's no longer safe for critics. It's no longer safe for basically anyone.
Roland Ebole is Amnesty International's regional researcher for Uganda and Tanzania. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Still in Kenya, Human Rights Watch has launched its annual World Report for 2025. It offers analysis and detailed findings of human rights issues in over 100 countries around the world last year. Mausi Segun, the director of Human Rights Watch, Director for Africa, launched the report in the Kenyan capital in Nairobi. In an interview with me, she talks about political repression, economic inequality, and impunity for right abuses contained in the latest Human Rights Watch report.
Now, what we largely focused on in that report, or if you will, a central theme, is that whilst there is widespread retreat from human rights standards, human rights obligations, and a higher level of tolerance for human rights abuses and human suffering that perhaps we have seen in recent decades, it is also important to note that there is resistance and there is a groundswell of people across different regions of the world, including in Africa, who are standing up against this regression on human rights. And, you know, people are going on the streets, people are challenging authorities, people are using the court systems, you know, people, whether, you know, domestic courts, regional courts, international human rights systems and courts, to try to challenge the problem of not just impunity, but an emboldening of abuses.
Now, let's talk about political repression on the continent as captured in this report.
Right. Many African governments, I think, you know, perhaps borrowing from the rule book of many other actors who have been able to exhibit blatant intolerance for opposition, political opposition, for dissent, for criticism, and even for just ordinary street protests, mostly unarmed street protests. A lot of it has happened in Africa around elections, before, after, a case in point being Kenya, and then you have Mozambique that's currently ongoing, the protests continue, but the response from the authorities have also been very heavy-handed. Some of the protests, you know, the more recent one in Kenya was around the rising cost of living. That's happened in many other places, and they were brutally put down in Nigeria, in Uganda, and elsewhere. In Kenya, not only were the protests, you know, brutally put down, the protests between June and August, which were largely around the high cost of living in the country. Of course, you know, you would consider the protests a success in the sense that despite the abuses and the violations committed, the protests managed to succeed in getting the government to reconsider the finance bill that was on the table and would have raised, you know, taxes to levels that would have been really unacceptable to the people.
Let me ask you about the issue of economic inequality contained in this report.
So, you know, with the high inflationary trends across the world, you know, Africa has the combined problem of rampant corruption and mismanagement of resources, leaving millions of people to continue to suffer chronic deprivation of their rights to basic economic and social rights, including, you know, this very basic access to food security, water, health, you know, access to education, and even just general social safety nets. You look at the informal, what we call informal settlements across large cities in Africa, or in the rural areas where, you know, the living off the land is no longer lucrative because of the cost of what people who live there have to buy and how meager their income is. Whereas within the cities, within the urban areas, you see a growing core of people with immense wealth, at least from the display. That is what can be, you know, can be deduced. But also the data, the statistics, you know, continue to tell us that while wealth is growing, it's growing just in the hands of just a few. The rest of the population across board, members of historically disadvantaged groups, remain the worst hit, including women, older people, you know, people with disabilities, those who are already trapped in poverty. Their poverty is being deepened, you know, and many of them are faced with entrenched discriminatory treatment. You know, a status inequality just by being poor. The fact that you're walking along the road, you can be picked up. Anything can happen to you because you live in what they call slums. You can be picked up. The things, you know, the abuses that would not happen to those who have the means and the resources, you know, whether of belonging to the elite or the economic elite or the political elite, are kind of exempted. And so you see these, you know, the chasm widening.
Mausi Segun is the director of Human Rights Watch for Africa. She spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. As U.S. President-elect Donald Trump prepares to be sworn into office, African analysts weigh in on what Trump's second term feels like for the continent compared with his first term. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
Many people remember U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's first term in office, during which he referred to Africa using degrading language. Edgar Githua is a professor of international relations at Strathmore University in Kenya.
He called Africa a shithole, excuse my French.
Estimated at over 1 billion people, Africa's population is growing fast and expected to reach 2.5 billion by 2050, according to various estimates. It's a big market that plays a key role in the global economy, Githua says. And in terms of business and trade, Trump may be interested in Africa, but only because of the inroads China has made here.
Since China is hell-bent on capturing Africa as a business destination, so Trump will come to Africa not so much because he really cares about Africa, but because he's coming to counter Chinese influence on the African soil. So that fight, that proxy war, that geopolitical repositioning, in my view, is what could probably benefit Africa.
But Trump's first term saw the birth of initiatives such as Prosper Africa, aimed at facilitating economic engagement between the U.S. and African nations. Since its launch in 2019, the U.S. has helped close nearly 3,000 deals across 49 countries for a value of more than $120 billion, according to figures shared on the initiative's website. While every American president establishes his own policy, many programs, including Prosper Africa, AGOA, or the African Growth and Opportunity Act, and PEPFAR, or the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, continue beyond the end of president's terms because they have solid bipartisan support in Congress. No matter who's in power in Washington, countries need to redefine what they want and how they want to work with the new administration, Rwandan economic analyst Teddy Kaberuka tells VOA. And while Trump's America First policy may suggest more focus on America, some emerging economies in Africa still can benefit, he says.
Because if he is focused on boosting the domestic production, obviously the U.S. will import a lot of raw material from all over the world, and most likely in Africa, being in minerals, being in agriculture.
Kaberuka says the Ukraine war has hurt African economies, especially the grain supply disruption it caused, triggering a shortage of about 30 million metric tons of grain in Africa in the first year of the war alone, according to the Atlantic Council, a policy research organization based in Washington. He says Trump didn't engage in wars during his first term and complimented the president-elect for publicly stating he aimed to help end the Ukraine war shortly after he takes office.
As an African, as someone who have that overview on the global economy, on African economy, the war we are facing, their consequences, I could say people like me were excited because, you know, from the experience, you know, the Trump administration, there were less wars.
In the Sahel, a region recently plagued by coups, the U.S. closed two military bases and withdrew from Niger last year, at the request of a junta that staged a coup the prior year. Their presence, U.S. officials said, was to help the region's counterterrorism efforts. Analyst Rida Liamuri, who's done field work in the Sahel Lake Chad Basin, is a senior fellow at the Policy Center for the New South, a Moroccan-based policy research firm in Washington.
We are seeing increasingly this narrative and this perception that is changing toward the West and accusing the West of being one of the problems why Africa has not seen significant economic development. The priority for the Trump administration to find ways to keep a positive image toward the U.S. and avoid what is currently happening, for example, to France in Francophone Africa.
Liamuri says he doesn't think the Sahel will be a priority for this new administration, but if that was to be, what happened in Niger should be a lesson.
It's a message to the U.S. Going forward to not take things for granted. And I think Niger have been a reliable partner in the region, but this decision shows that it doesn't mean that it's guaranteed that the partnership is going to be forever.
Trump will take the oath of office Monday. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
On Monday, January 20th, the American people will again watch history in the making with the inauguration of their 47th president, Donald John Trump. VOA will broadcast the presidential inauguration live starting at 1600 UTC for people around the world to see democracy in action and how peaceful transfer of power works. Tune in right here on VOA.
In his farewell address from the Oval Office Wednesday evening, President Joe Biden warned of the dangers in the concentration of power and wealth. The speech capped his decades-long political career and a four-year term bookended by Donald Trump, who in days is set to be inaugurated for a second term. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekuswara has this report.
President Joe Biden will leave the White House when his term ends on January 20th. In his farewell address Wednesday evening, he left a warning.
The dangerous concentration of power in the hands of a very few ultra-wealthy people. And the dangerous consequences if their abuse of power is left unchecked. Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms.
The president did not say who he meant by oligarchy, but some of the nation's biggest billionaires, including Elon Musk, have forged close ties with President-elect Donald Trump. Without naming anyone, Biden made a jab at the recent decision by Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg that the social media company, which owns Facebook and Instagram, would stop working with fact-checkers.
The free press is crumbling. Editors are disappearing. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit.
Biden ended his term on a high note on foreign policy. Just hours earlier, he announced that Israel and Hamas had reached a ceasefire and hostage agreement in Gaza. The deal will largely be implemented by the incoming administration.
That's why I told my team to keep the incoming administration fully informed, because that's how it should be, working together as Americans.
In a letter released Wednesday, Biden reflected on how his administration began in the shadows of COVID and the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol by a mob of Trump supporters intent on overturning the result of the 2020 election that Biden won. Biden is leaving office after one term with only a 39% approval rating, according to Gallup. How his legacy will be remembered may also depend on his successor, said presidential historian from Vanderbilt University, Thomas Schwartz, via Skype.
If Trump is really proves to be as dangerous to Democratic norms as Biden and the Democrats suggested, then I think he may be seen as very prophetic. But otherwise, I think if things are less apocalyptic with Trump and you see more or less a more normal presidency that runs into problems and has some achievements, I think Biden will be more remembered for what he actually accomplished.
Biden's accomplishment, the White House said, include leading a strong economic recovery. And while Biden attempted to wind down foreign entanglements, he is criticized mostly for the chaotic U.S. exit from Afghanistan. Biden ended by thanking the nation for the privilege to serve.
I still believe in the idea for which this nation stands. A nation where the strength of our institutions and the character of our people matter and must endure. Now it's your turn to stand guard.
Patsy Wadekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And looking ahead to tomorrow's program, Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, is known across the continent for his decades at the highest levels of global diplomacy at the United Nations. Listeners of this program also know him for his regular independent commentary on major world issues. Dr. Jonah, however, will be hanging up his microphone and retiring soon. Tune in tomorrow to his final thoughts on the state of the world. But first, right now it's time for music from African collection.
Authentic will never end, cause it's plenty. The more the girls wanna get me, for me the best. My head, my shoulder down to my belly. Your love is sweet when I twist it, because you see me with Katie. It's not enough to leave me.
Trouble no send young man who buy the banner we spend.
We
Zuliak by them, don't bracket you are like a lopper.
Who spray me?
Mama, throw it for the boys for Zanga. Hey, go to challenge us, small boys, they cannot think of that.
So say,
100 million is a need.
So far I say, now we can fuck up, you say, bomb boys. See how we did it, feel they ball like in the bush. No man check on the girls, so scared them.
I don't follow for the game where they play my advice. If you want follow till the way I like you, go tell I.
Why?
You got the walk from sunrise to sunset like exile. You got the run to fall.
Yeah.
You got the hustle full cause Gamboro dies.
Yeah, 20 color for my niggas for borrow. Pull up with the gang, got the leeches, no say my no. Pull up to batty, man about me, I run on the practice. Chipping out cash, pick up my auntie. Pound on the line, but I'm for ISIS.
Yeah, yeah. How many men they kill to fill my body? Oh? You cannot fathom my white shanky party, oh. Pull up and spray my pumpy, oh. I don't get time for money, oh. You cannot be my party, cause calamansi know they are touchy.
I bust out, come pop like one time. Burn all the money up, everybody, they run the beat like ghost town. Yeah, Versace, Fendi, and Prada. Louis Vuitton, Cushetti, Oshetti, why they bada? The money long, MC Hammer. I know they play with them, it's the return of the
shot. The club, we know, send young man who buy the banner, we spend. Ah, Zuliak by them, don't bracket you are like a lopper.
Queen of rap,
throw it for the boys for Zanga.
Show me up,
bro. Or they go to challenge us, small boys, they cannot think of that.
So say, 100 million is an insult. So what I say,
yeah.
Now who they fool, they abuse their bombers.
For small children.
See how they fool, they ball like
in the bush.
No man check on the girls, so scared of me.
My guys, them know me. Since 06, I've been writing this story. I know be OG, but if you ask them know me. I know they blow trees, only lonely me lonely. Music chose me, just know this and know peace. I dey lucky, but I'm never lonely. Sexy ladies, come wine feed me slowly.
Midnight, fuck, I'm gonna shake up.
Fear in my mind is a warning. Pray to the one you're relying. I've been wandering all day. I tried to be fine, but I can't be. The noise in my mind wouldn't leave me. I tried to get by, but I'm burning. One is the joy that you cannot waste, and the other one price that you cannot fix. This is the peace that you cannot buy, finding a way where you cannot see. Man with this system, he cannot pray. I need to find relief. But behind my mind,
that was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mogwi Yabaru, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the law is a spider's web. Only the little insects get caught in it. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
So show me that you understand.